Well, now to the phase of life where a bit of help at home, and I stress at home, this is not a story about nursing homes, where a bit of help is needed, and to some, recent changes that should give older people more choice and control over the home care they receive. Earlier this week, changes came into effect to allow older people to direct their government-funded home care package to a provider of their own choice, one who may better suit their needs. Now, previously, government-allocated home care packages or funds went straight to the home care providers, which sometimes resulted in unspent funds remaining with the provider and very little flexibility for the person at home. Some of you might be navigating this area for a parent or for yourself right now. And we're talking about $4 billion, by the way, involved in this, so there's a lot of money at stake. This market has been traditionally dominated by the not-for-profits, but it's changing with new entrants, with a focus on marketing and new power to the consumer. But there are a few pitfalls. So what does it all really mean? Well, Associate Professor Li Fei Lo is the Associate Professor in Ageing and Health at Sydney University, and she's to be our guide. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Could you explain what the shift is here, please, on an individual level? What used to happen when you found yourself needing help at home?
When you found yourself needing help at home, you got an aged care assessment team assessment. If they approved you for a package, a home care package, you would then have to find a provider who had a vacancy. So because the government gave the packages to providers to deliver a set number,
right?
If you got an approval, you then had to find someone with a vacancy, so a vacant package or a vacant bed. And if you couldn't find someone, a provider with a vacant bed, you then put your name on the wait lists of multiple providers and waited till one came up.
Okay, so this shifts and these changes mean that does the money come straight to the person or not?
No, the money still doesn't come straight to the person, but the package, not the direct cash comes to the person, but the package is tied to the person. So it doesn't matter which accredited provider they spend their money with.
So people are still assessed in terms of their needs under the system.
Yes.
Is that what you call an ACAT assessment?
Yes, ACAT assessment.
ACAT, righto. Yep. So what would happen now if somebody was assessed as needing care at home, which is the approved form, and they have to get on a sort of queue to wait,
yep,
that you were describing?
Yes. So now there's a centralised waiting list, which is much better for the older person, which the government's is holding, and they're going to publish how long the average wait is, but they haven't done that because they've just started, you know, putting this waiting list together. But in the old system, people in our study waited, you know, half the people in our study waited a year to get a package. And we've heard stories that in other areas, because there's more packages in some areas than other areas, people are waiting up to 2 years for a package.
I mean, I'm thinking regional areas, for instance.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And so in that time, their families or they simply have to cope.
Or they just give up and go into a nursing home because they can't manage.
Oh, I see.
But the problem was that you didn't know how long you needed to wait. Whereas now, at least if you know how long you need to wait, you can either decide that you're not going to wait or put in other, you know, other measures.
And have you found that people have varying needs at home? Like, do they want different things?
People do have varying needs. I mean, you're either approved for a level one, level two package, which is kind of less care, or a level three, level four package. And by level four, it's about meant to be equivalent to nursing home level care.
So it's high care.
But
I suppose what I'm really wondering is some people might want a cleaner, some might want a gardener, some might want someone to do their shopping. Is that the sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, most people want someone to come and clean, help them do the shopping, and maybe give them a hand getting ready in the morning, so, you know, with showers or with medication. But there's other ways you can use your package which might help you stay at home longer. So, for example, if your problem is mobility, you could actually use your package to have some physiotherapy, which might then help you be able to walk better, so you could do the shopping yourself or do the shopping with some help.
So how, I don't quite understand how it's easier for the person to change providers, though. Explain how that might work.
So that's different. Before, you could theoretically change providers, but only if there was a vacancy that another provider had. And remember, I already talked about the shortage of packages, so you had to just wait and see. Now you can change providers if you want to now. So So I'm a Chinese person. If I was with a provider who didn't provide language, you know, culturally appropriate services in my language, now I could go to the Chinese specific provider, just swap.
And so you alert, do you, the government that you want to change providers?
Yes.
And that money is taken out of that provider and goes to the new provider. And is the idea more seamlessly than it did in the past?
Well, I don't know how seamless it's going to be yet because it's just started. But each person has a referral code and that gets given to the government either through the My Aged Care website or by phoning them. And that referral code then means that the package stops being paid to your original provider and starts being paid to your new provider.
So dare I say it's a bit like insurance or phone plans or electricity plans, God forbid, in that the consumer, am I right, has to work out what's best and then choose. I mean, there's a level of complexity here that certainly wouldn't be terrific if I was dealing with mild dementia or depression.
It's super confusing. It's probably even more confusing than insurance because we're used to playing insurance our whole life. And if you imagine that the people providing the insurance are just learning how to provide insurance in this consumer-directed, you know, way of managing budgets.
So I can see a whole new broker type person emerging to help people. Can you see that?
Yeah, we're starting to see a few of these broker kind of positions. And we're also starting to see emerging to the market, like you said, private providers who have a sales team who offer you free advice about, you know, how to navigate the system.
Oh, yes, free advice. Because I do read that management fees, and these are people sort of saying, look, I think people are actually welcoming the system but can see the pitfalls. Some of the management fees already can be as high as 40%. Gee, that's a big take.
It is. So if you think a base level package might be $6,000, $8,000, if you think that 40% of that is spent in fees, then you end up with, you know, $4,000, $5,000 to spend over a year on care. That's like, you know, an hour a week, 2 hours a week.
Yes. Li Fei Low, Associate Professor in Ageing and Health at the University of Sydney, is our guest. And we're talking about these really quite significant changes that were introduced this past week to home and community care. So do you, by and large, are you for this? Do you think this is going to bring a whole new mix of providers into the system to, you know, really revive it?
When the idea was first pitched, theoretically, I think it's a fantastic idea. I think that we've got a long way to go in terms of implementing it in a way that will really empower older people and their families to make these decisions. So the My Aged Care website, the government website, doesn't really give consumers a lot of help in comparing their providers. So what would be neat would be a website which showed the management fees, for example, so that you could look at them across providers, but we don't have that yet.
But that might come, I suppose.
That might come. There's no way really of knowing the quality of the providers, but, you know, that's on the cards. Just depends on how long it's going to take for that to happen.
Could there be opportunities for really small providers to come in? I suppose that's who are for-profit providers.
That's what happened in the UK. So in the UK, they've had this system for a while, and what we saw is more niche providers were coming in. So for example, a 24-hour care provider. So we hardly have any of those now, you know, who send someone to live at your house for a week. So I think that would be niche providers happen. And some of the niche providers we have now, the culturally appropriate ones, perhaps the dementia-specific ones, they might be more popular because that's the service that people know that they're after.
And are you sure? I suppose you really don't know yet because it's just starting. If somebody does become upset or about the care they're currently getting, and theoretically under this new scheme they've got the right to move, I'm just wondering about their relationship with the people who come into their homes. You know, there's a very intimate relationship to that extent. Moving money around, moving money away from those people, like, it could be tricky, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we know that older people won't even complain about their service because they're really scared about it being taken away. So even if you ask them about the quality of the service, they tend to say, you know, kind of neutral or nice things about it. So I think in that transition period, it could be really uncomfortable, you know, if you're looking for someone and at the same time your service is still coming and giving you a shower and, you know, kind of being your support every day.
Well, you become a genuine client, don't you? It's a business relationship. It just definitely changes. It might change something is what I'm suggesting
to you. Yeah, yeah, I agree with that possibility.
Mm. Look, just while I have you in the studio, can I just ask you something more? Last year we ran an interview with aged care consultant James Underwood, who painted, I suppose, quite a rosy picture of what he called world-class care in our nursing homes. I'm moving now to nursing homes, not home care. And he talked about an excess of beds and therefore a situation where homes had to improve their standards to be successful. It was this whole thing of, you know, competition working. And our listeners hit the email and a lot of them disagreed with James, and they were complaining about terrible standards and waiting lists, and they pointed to submissions, including the Aged Care Workforce and New South Wales Inquiry into Elder Abuse, and I promised to revisit it, and we haven't yet. I wonder, as a skilled observer of this system, what is your take on our aged care system? Have we become world class, would you say?
I would say that we are definitely world class compared to some other countries. So, but perhaps not compared to others. So it's the European countries, like in the Netherlands or some of the Scandinavian countries, they certainly have better quality services. They have more health professionals in their services, and they perhaps have higher standards of care. I mean, there's still a long way to go, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
But things have improved quite a lot.
Things are improving. I mean, with regards to waiting lists, what in facilities, I mean, good facilities have long waiting lists and really not as good ones have beds, vacant beds.
Yes, well, I promise people we will come back to this issue. And if people want more information, you go to what's the website you said, the government website?
The government website is My Aged Care.
My Aged Care, because there could be lots of people listening who want to help their family.
And the other useful website is the Council of the Age website called Home Care Today. That's much more user-friendly.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. And those changes come in this past week. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Jody.
Lee Fay Low, Associate Professor in Ageing and Health at the University of Sydney. And we'll be following up that story. Just before we go to the news, I've just got a lovely letter from Rod Slapp, who talks about listening via podcast while at work, driving on day and night shifts. I'm a FIFO train driver in the Pilbara, and we have poor radio and mobile reception outside the town limits. I download the podcast in town before my departure to keep me entertained and informed during my 12-hour shift. I'm also studying part-time political science and international relations, so your subject matter I always find stimulating and educational. I've been meaning to read that out for weeks, Rod. It's a lovely piece. We'll remember you, and I hope you'll stay after 8 to hear our fare.
This Is About is a podcast hosted by Jordan Raskopoulos. That's me. Stories told by those who live them.
To do a good job, you kind of have to believe that you're Spider-Man.
He was holding what he claimed was Ned Kelly's skull.
She just said to me, if you can't have this baby, I'll have a baby for you.
What I thought was two different dolphins was just one shark.
What? This Is About on the ABC Radio app or wherever you get your favourite podcasts.
Listen now.
On your phone.
You know, just do the thumb thing.